Welcome back to another episode of Palisade Radio. I am your host, Karim Mamutlu. And on today's show, we have the best-selling writer, speculator, and the founder and chairman of Casey Research, Doug Casey. Welcome back to the show, Doug.
Thank you, Karim.
Let's begin by talking about the beginning of your career, Doug. I'd like to understand what were the goals and ambitions of a young Doug Casey when you were first starting out. Had you always been interested in the markets?
Well, listen, I've always been self-directed and self-educated. And even when I was a little kid, I would look for entrepreneurial things to do. There's not much that a kid can do, but I would always shovel snow in the winter and cut grass in the summer, that type of thing. But how do you get into the mining finance business and speculating in these mining stocks? And I'd say it was because the first thing I wanted to be when I was a kid was a paleontologist. That's dinosaurs. Lots of kids love dinosaurs and think they want to be a paleontologist. And I guess there's another generation of them coming up due to the Jurassic Park movies. But geology, of course, is paleontology is a division of geology. So I got interested in that type of thing, rocks, the way the earth works. And I combined that with my desire to make money, which is to say have control over the physical universe. You combine money and geology, you come up with mining. Although I've got to say mining is a terrible way to make money as a business. It can be an excellent way to make money as a speculator, though. So that's the background of my having gotten into this silly business.
Well, let's move on to today. And with gold now perhaps ready to continue its bull market with $1,400 area acting as a key level, is the third and final stage in gold's bull market now ready to begin, in your opinion?
Yeah, that's the $64 question. I am not a chart reader, but I do look at charts in order to get perspective on where the market seems to be going, whether it's high or low, and the direction it's taking. And I've got to say that I'm extremely bullish on gold now. I've always been a gold bug. In other words, somebody that believes in gold as the numeraire, something that should be money once again. But I'm also a gold bull now. Even at $1,400, which is not particularly cheap, I think it's got a lot of upside for a number of reasons. One of them being that I think since all of the world's currencies, the dollar, the euro, the yen, all of them, they're really just floating abstractions. They're issued by bankrupt governments for political reasons. It's logical that the world at large and even large governments are going to go back to gold. Why? Let's take the Chinese and the Russians to start with. They don't want to take each other's currencies. They recognize that the ruble and the yuan are can be created at will. Right now, they have to use U.S. dollars to trade with each other. They certainly don't want to use the currency of their adversary that clears through New York. I think the Russians and the Chinese are going to come out with gold-backed currencies, and the rest of the world will follow because nobody wants to use the dollar anymore. So the answer to the question is, yeah, gold's going higher. We're in another bull market.
You've had much success within the resource space, Doug, particularly within the junior mining stocks. So can you share with us what it was like being in the previous gold bull market back in the late 70s? The mania in the juniors is perhaps well known for excessive gains that led to creating wealth in a relatively short period of time. So what did that bull market teach you about the art of being a speculator within the precious metals space?
Well, I first started playing with these stocks back in the early 70s, and my knowledge base of the way the market worked was much, much lower than it is today. Look, these are the most volatile securities in the world. They're more volatile than tech stocks and internet stocks. Mining stocks have always, as a group, gone 10 to 1 on the upside when there's a real move, and then crashed 95% afterwards. They go down more than they go up because most of them are burning matches. I mean, they're on an Easter egg hunt looking for deposits, and the odds are really, really against them. Actually, the market is less volatile now than it used to be. But there's really no interest in mining stocks. There's really no interest in gold on the part of the American public. And that's a good thing. These things are cheap and they're underowned. I'm a real bull at this point. Look, commodities last peaked, all commodities, not just gold and silver, but the grains, the meats, the tropical commodities like coffee. All these things last peaked in the 2011-2012 area. So we've been in a bear market now for something on the order of 7 or even 8 years. Commodities are the only cheap thing in the world. And I suspect in a world where stocks and bonds and real estate in some places are in hyper bubbles, that finally commodities are going to have their day in the sun, led by gold and silver. I'm very, very bullish.
So for you, Doug, is it harder to buy at the bottom of a market or to sell at the top in terms of market timing? And does this get easier with experience? Do the signals or indicators you look for get easier to read?
No question that it gets easier as you become more experienced. It's only natural to run with the crowd. And that's what most people do by definition. You can't be contrarian if you're most people. But it's a different thing buying at the bottom. Buying at the bottom, you have to be looking at something that everybody else thinks is a dead duck, nobody else is doing. It's discouraging. It takes time. You buy at the bottom, you can wait a year or 2 years for anything to happen. Selling at the top is different because you watch the covers of magazines, the ones that are still published. You watch the news. You see what's on people's minds, what they're talking about at cocktail parties. And when everybody's interested in investments, in a given investment, that's time to start heading towards the exits. So you look for different things, but it's possible to do both. I wish I knew 30 years ago what I know now, but it's not just a matter of economics, selling and buying. It's a matter of psychology. So I guess that's what I'd have to say in answer.
Over the course of your career, you've participated and been through quite a few bull and bear market cycles. The uranium bull market in the mid-2000s was a great example of being early in a new bull market and waiting for the story to play out. So what was it like to invest in uranium in the 2000-2001 period before the big moves? And what does uranium look like to you today, Doug? Are we in another bull market?
Well, I've always been a uranium bull. Why? Because I believe nuclear power is, from a scientific point of view, by far the safest, the cheapest, and the cleanest form of mass power generation. That's not going to change anytime soon. It's just a political hot potato. Now, in the last uranium bull market, which started at 2001, uranium was something on the order of $10 or $11 a pound. It's only about doubled since then. In other words, it's just about kept up with the retail price index of everything else. So once again, it's a huge bargain. Miners, almost no miners, can make money at this point. Above ground supplies are being drawn down. I think uranium is in for an explosive move. I don't know, since it's the bottom of a bear market, whether that move is going to happen tomorrow morning or a year or maybe 2 years from now. But I'll point out that during that last bull market of the early to mid aughts, there were about four or maybe five legitimate uranium companies before it started. By the time it ended, there were several hundred. They grew like poison mushrooms after a rainstorm. This is the time to buy uranium stocks, and the same thing is going to happen. That area is going to go 10 to 1, and there will be scores of so-called uranium companies that are created to capitalize on the mania.
Over the next few years, with excessive debt continuing to climb and policymakers continuing to do anything to push the general markets higher, the potential for a global economic collapse is something that you've been calling for that will make 2008 look like child's play. But you've also talked about how you are hopeful on the other side of it, thanks in part to technology. So can you talk about this with us?
I am absolutely convinced that we're going to have, we're going to go back into what I call the Greater Depression. Now, we have to define what a depression is. It's not necessarily going to be like it was in the 1930s and 40s. A depression is a period of time when most people's standard of living goes down significantly. And all the debt in the world, hundreds of trillions of dollars of debt, most of that is consumer debt. Government debt is all consumer debt, for one thing. But it's an indicator that people have been living above their means. So their standards of living could drop significantly. And all the money that governments have been creating to paper over the financial problems that came to the fore starting in 2007, that's created tremendous distortions and misallocations of capital that are going to have to be liquidated. So the way I look at it, we entered a gigantic financial hurricane in 2007. 2008 and 9 were the peak. We've been in the eye of the storm since late 2010. It's a giant hurricane, giant eye of the storm. We're going into the trailing edge of that hurricane. And it's going to be much different, much worse, and much longer lasting, because these governments are going to pull out all the stops again to try to paper it over. But I don't think it's going to succeed. So I'm very bearish for the short term on the economy. But as you pointed out, I have to be very bullish for the long term. Why? Because science and technology, they're primarily responsible for our the increases we've had in the standard of living. And there are more scientists and engineers alive today than have lived in all of Earth's past history combined. And many areas of science and technology are advancing at the rate of Moore's Law, so that the future could be incredibly bright. I just hope that these governments don't quash that by totally destroying the economy and making it impractical or uneconomic to invest further in science and technology. But you go through the storm, you come out the other side. So I'm very optimistic for the future, and I'm looking to buy sometime in the next few years common stocks, so that I'll be able to afford the tremendous advances that will inevitably be made. So bearish, bullish, I'm both in different areas for different reasons.
Very good. Okay, let's move on and talk about a few of the books or authors that have shaped you as a contrarian investor over the course of your career, Doug. And is there anything you're currently reading today that you can share with us?
Yeah, well, what was a really I take my hat off to Ayn Rand. She wrote a short but brilliant book called The Virtue of Selfishness. It's only about 120 pages, something on that order. When I finished reading the first page of it, I had to put it down because I was thunderstruck with the way she crystallized and formulated things that I've been thinking but were inchoate in my mind. So let's say the Virtue of Selfishness by Rand might be number one. I would say Economics in One Lesson, another very short book, only probably 120, 130 pages, something on that order, by Henry Hazlitt. That really straightened my thinking out with basic economic principles. So that would be number two. A man named Harry Brown, not too well known today, but he wrote a book called How to Profit from the Coming Devaluation in 1970. I read that book before the 1971 devaluation, started buying gold coins. And Harry later became a very good friend of mine. All of his books are brilliant. So I recommend those. Well, those are three formational books, and I think that all three of them are still very relevant and very important for everybody to read today.
Excellent. Okay, as we begin to wrap up the show, Doug, is there anything else you wish to discuss? Anything else on your mind at the moment?
Well, I've written, I don't know, four or five nonfiction books, starting with my first one, The International Man. And of course, my website is called internationalman.com, which I urge people to go to. We have some really great articles there every day. But, you know, I've directed my interest away from writing nonfiction towards fiction. And the reason is you can say a lot of things in fiction that you dare not say in nonfiction, quite frankly. So my first novel is called, in a series of what will be seven novels, is called Speculator, which is about the mining business and our hero, who's Charles Knight, who's 23 years old, goes off to Africa, gets involved in a gold mining fraud and a bush war and makes $100 million and loses it. It's a very good novel, if I do say so myself. Then, 7 years later, he becomes Drug Lord, which is the name of the second novel. And here we go into all aspects of the drug business, legal, illegal. And once again, he makes a huge amount of money and it's stolen from him by the government. Then he becomes Assassin, which is the one we're going to come out with in November, which discusses the theory and the practice and the morality and the history of political assassinations. It's going to be a hot potato. I'm very optimistic for that book. So that's what I do, other than the blog internationalman.com. And of course, I write things for caseyresearch.com as well. So what am I doing? I guess that. I've been to 155 countries, most several times. Lived in 10 countries, mostly live in Argentina these days. Nothing new on that score. I suspect, Karam, if we talk 6 months from now, the entire world might be different than it is today.
I look forward to meeting up with you again in 6 months' time. Thank you very much for your time today, Doug.
Well, it's a pleasure to be talking to you in London from Vancouver. Thanks, Karam.
think you understand the junior mining sector and you think that the participants in the mining sector, junior mining sector, are good people and kind people, hit the bid.
How violent that term could be, it actually could be quite violent. It could be a rip your face off uranium rally.
And the world is always going to need raw material. It's going to need copper and gold and nickel and so forth.
Totally destabilized. Hey, troll, did you hear what's going on in Yemen?